Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Welcome back to an adventure in history. We are just smack dab in the middle of summer, enjoying the lovely, hot, warm weather. I'm not complaining. Are you complaining?
Well, it depends what hot is.
Well, like
a couple
hot
weeks ago,
here.
When it was in the 80s, that was miserably hot.
Okay.
And that's one of the reasons I love living in a place like this where 80 knocks us all out.
Oh, that's, yeah, yes. Because we're done at that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. It can get warmer for me, but I do have air conditioning.
Well, that's because you lived in Florida.
I don't work in three old buildings.
That's right. With no
air conditioning. Have air conditioning. Yeah.
Or in modest levels of heat
right.
When the time comes.
And when I do visit, I go to the basement.
I always tell people, the basements of all our buildings are really cool.
Perfect.
They kind of
yeah.
stay perfect.
Built well.
But the carriage house, I always say, we're really trying to heat and cool a barn. When you get down to it, it is a barn.
Right. That's what it was. It was a carriage house.
But speaking of which, painting is going amazing. It looks fantastic.
Oh, good.
Yeah. We're only about a side and a half done.
But... okay. And the grounds are gorgeous.
Of course.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like all season of flowers and everything. Yeah.
It's all coming together.
Good place to take some pictures. I have a good word.
All right. Let's
start with my word.
Hit me with the word.
Okay. It's a noun.
Because it's just you and me today.
It is. Yep. We had to get in just our talking time. Chiriotism.
Chiriotism.
It's a noun. Chiriotism.
Begins with a K or a C?
It's a C-H.
Chiriotism.
So it looks like chariotism.
Okay. And it's a noun.
It is.
I believe it is a cart for fruit picking.
Ooh, interesting. Not even close.
Just because you said it sounds like it looks like it should be cherry.
It does, yes. It's an insult concealed as a friendly joke.
Oh.
A chiriotism.
Oh, that's like what kids always do. Oh,
yep.
Just joking. When you say that's
yep.
inappropriate. That yep. wasn't right. Oh, I was just kidding.
Yep.
No, you weren't.
My 4-year-old does that all the time.
Yeah.
Just joking.
No, you're not.
Depending on the reaction,
yes.
right? Like,
yes.
That's her go-to.
My 28-year-old still does it. No.
Yeah, of course.
No, she doesn't.
Oh.
All right. And she's, okay. Shall we just move along?
Let's move along.
All right. So these are the history highlights, things that happened tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
July 22nd, 1686.
Whoa.
The city of Albany, New York is chartered.
Oh.
Albany.
Okay. Well, great. Welcome to the party.
I grew up in New York, so.
So you love it.
It's the state capital. I don't know. I never really hung around Albany that much, so I can't speak to whether it's a great city or a bad city.
Pretty far north?
Kind
of smack dab?
No, it's kind of like 2 hours north. That's where, because I grew up 50 miles north of New York City.
Okay.
And, of course, anybody not in New York State, when you say, oh, I'm from New York, they assume the city. So I learned decades ago to say, oh, I'm from upstate New York. But anybody in New York, you got to be north of Albany to be north.
Okay.
or upstate. So you'd say that and somebody would know and they'd say, oh, where? And then I'd say the name of the town. They're like, that's not upstate.
Oh.
And I'm like, yeah, I know, but I just have to say that because people immediately think I'm from New York City.
Right.
So, all right. So it's about 2 hours, 2.5 hours north of New York City. 1796, Cleveland, Ohio is founded.
Oh, it's a good day to found or charter.
Apparently by General Moses Cleveland, and his name is Cleveland.
Okay.
So like Cleve, like I'm going to use my cleaver. Cleveland, originally called Cleveland, the public adopted the current name after newspaper editor noticed the name was too long to fit on a page. On the page.
That's too funny.
So the guy loses his A-V or A, just the
yeah.
A out of the middle. That's it. That's all he loses, the A.
And you couldn't have changed the font size.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, back then, newspapers.
Probably not.
Come
yeah.
on. Not too easy. All right. 1893. And this was, I thought briefly about making this one the history highlight. 1893, Catherine Lee Bates writes America the Beautiful while she's in Colorado.
Oh.
I like America the Beautiful.
Yes, it is. It's the prettiest one, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Have we discussed my loathing? Well, not loathing. My dislike of our the Star-Spangled Banner.
A little.
I just don't think it's the best song. It's hard to sing.
Right. For anybody, right? And then we chastise the real singers who botch it.
Yes.
And it's like, well, we can't do it either.
And does anybody even know all the words?
Right, I know.
I mean, I guarantee half of the population does not know all the words.
And then, so why do we also make people sing it a cappella?
I don't know.
Why don't we add music?
Now, I like the whole story, Francis Scott Key, and I like the poem that he wrote.
Oh, sure.
It just never should have been put to music, and it never should have become our national anthem.
Right.
I would be okay with America the Beautiful.
Yeah, I agree. Right. Okay, there we go. There's our rant.
1923, John Dillinger joins the Navy in an attempt to avoid prosecution. He was being brought up on charges of auto theft in Indiana, so he joins the Navy.
Oh.
And within months, he goes AWOL, and then he's arrested for armed robbery, and then, of course, he becomes, you know, the most wanted.
Okay.
America's most wanted.
And then we maybe buttoned up our policies for joining the military.
Well, 1923, I don't know, maybe. Yeah. 1933, Wiley Post completes the first solo flight around the world.
Ooh.
It takes him 7 days and 19 hours.
The first solo flight. So what?
He obviously has to stop and gas up.
Right.
He's the only guy in the plane.
Yeah. Okay. So
7 days, 19 hours.
Impressive.
1934, John Dillinger, back to John Dillinger. It's a repeat day. John Dillinger is gunned down.
Oh.
In Chicago, 1934. 1959, Ed Wood's cult classic Plan 9 from Outer Space is called the worst movie ever made. It premieres. Plan 9. We showed Plan 9.
Oh, did you?
It has Vampyra, a story of Vampyra in it. And we showed it at the Liberty Theater.
And probably cult classic now, right?
Because
it's so bad.
I had never watched it before we showed it. I think we showed it last October. I'd never watched it in a group audience of people. Yeah, I'd watched it online.
Kind of interacting and stuff.
And it's very funny how people just crack up over the worst possible acting.
Yeah.
Or at one point, the guy's like talking with his gun. And he's just like waving it around as he talks, pointing it at people, not intentionally, but so.
So that's the recommendation.
Yeah. So
watch in a group.
Definitely. And I don't know if we'll show that again or not, because Vampyra is, you know, our hometown hero. Mm-hmm. We own her here. So we definitely probably will do more Vampyra things. But Plan 9 from Outer Space, Ed Wood is released on this day, 1959. Speaking of horrible, 1991, Jeffrey Dahmer is caught.
Mm, yeah.
2003, Kusei and Uday Hussein are killed.
Okay. The brothers.
Yeah. Obviously. Do you think they ever had a chance having a dad like Saddam Hussein?
Or though they were their sons.
They were the sons.
No.
Yeah.
Well, no. But
they were brothers. But
I think that a lot of people didn't have a chance with him in power either. Right?
But our history highlight today, I think had the most impact. 1793. Alexander Mackenzie reaches the Pacific Ocean, becoming the first Euro-American to complete a transcontinental crossing.
Ooh.
And he goes across Canada.
Okay.
So 1793, Lewis and Clark, not till 1805, 1806.
Yeah.
And this guy, Alexander Mackenzie, he's kind of a hero in Canada. And we really should know his name because he did a lot of exploring. And he was kind of the first contact for a lot of course, Canadians. They refer to them as First Nation for us Native Americans. So I think kind of a significant guy.
Yeah. And how do you know how old he was? I mean,
I don't.
Or party size. Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Yeah. We should do a show
deeper
on him.
Dive.
We should do a show on him.
Yeah.
He's kind of
does sound interesting.
So, but that's my history holiday. What did I miss? Anything?
You didn't miss anything. I just briefly looked, did my homework late, but no, I didn't see anything. But we do have some activities coming up. Of course, the Seaside Farmers Market is still going on. Providence Seaside Hospital is the main event sponsor. They have a tent there right next to the stage because they have live music there every week. This is on Wednesdays from 2 to 6. But they also have fruits and veggies and then arts and craft vendors as well. And then usually some food vendors too, like so you can go grab a bite to eat.
So just dawn on me, arts and crafts.
Yes.
Does anybody just make crafts or anybody just make arts?
Yes. Well, I consider art more likely painting, right? Or something, whereas a craft is...
What your kid does?
Something, correct. Or you make something, you're making it, right? Like you're making a purse
don't
or
you
you're
art?
Making aprons.
Don't you make art
you
as well?
Create it.
You create art. and you make crafts. Is that your definition then?
Sure.
Okay.
I'll go with that.
See, I whenever things are linked like that, I always have to think about them because I hate compare and contrast.
Right.
It's the same thing. If I am comparing, I am in fact contrasting already.
But if you look at a portrait, do you say, what a nice craft. Little craft project you did?
That Da Vinci.
Yeah. I mean, you do not. Or you should not.
I've never postulated on this before. Oh. Just because it's the first time I thought about it when you said arts and crafts.
Yes.
And I thought, I'm going to ask her.
So the next fun thing, too, is there is also in Seaside with Sunset Empire Parks and Rec, they have a fun chalk art contest. And this is for all ages. It's super fun. It's out on the boardwalk. It's July 26th and 27th. They actually have a local artist that's going to be doing like a session on basics of pastel painting.
Ooh.
Or you can just go out there with your chalk.
And go nuts.
It starts, on Saturday the 27th, 9 a.m. On the prom. You get to start painting or using your chalk, and they have awards for all ages, and there's lots of different categories.
Nice.
But it's kind of fun. But you can just walk it, too. So we've walked it, and you really will get the gamut of the creativity.
That's excellent. And, I don't know the time. I forgot to write down the times. But on Fridays, you can go up to the Astoria Column.
Ooh.
And you can decorate for like 2 hours. I think it's like noon to two. But don't quote me on that. You can decorate your glider if you buy it.
Oh,
and eco-friendly. So when the glider disappears into the woods, it is not going to contaminate anything.
You mean like you provide...
You have to buy your own glider for
right,
a dollar. But,
right.
But we provide all
the paint,
eco-friendly
or...
decorations.
Okay. Ooh, that's fun.
And then you have the quandary of, do I really want to go up to the top and throw this away now that I've decorated it?
Right. Well, kids don't care.
But on Saturdays, and again, I forgot to write down the time, we have glider games where we have a target. And if you hit the target from the top of the column, throwing your glider off, you win $50 and a case of Aquafina.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
You hit the target.
So you definitely should put your name on the glider.
Yeah, well,
right?
Staff is there to witness.
But still.
Yeah.
Okay. I love that. How fun.
Glider games.
Okay. Glider
now
games at the column.
At the Astoria column.
I love it.
All right. Because, we're working with them, the Historical Society.
I know.
We have a partnership.
I love the partnership.
Yeah. So we had something we were going to do right around July 4th.
Mm-hmm.
But then we had guests instead. So I had pulled this, and it was entertaining to me. So I think you may not like parts of it.
Entertaining to you or me. This is really the only reason we do the show.
Yes. So this is about one of our favorite, perhaps the most mysterious founding father of them all.
Okay.
And it's by a person named Genevieve Carlton.
Okay.
It's online. It's really good stuff. But it's called The Wildlife of Governor Morris. And Governor is his name.
Got it.
It's not his title. And Governor is spelled G-O-U-V-E-R-N-E-U-R. So I assume I'm pronouncing it. I assume it's Governor.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's Gouverneur.
I know.
So, we the people of the United States is perhaps the most famous phrase in the Constitution, and it was penned by one of the most mysterious founding fathers, Governor Morris, who was born in the Bronx, New York, and spent many years in Europe. Might not top the list of the best founding fathers, but he was one of the wildest of the bunch. None of the founding fathers were saints, of course, but Morris arguably led the craziest life. From engaging to trysts at the Louvre to losing a leg in an adultery-driven accident to vehemently opposing slavery, Morris never failed to fascinate.
Okay, well, let's just dig right on in.
Do you want me to do this first one?
Oh, do I? Maybe. Go ahead.
All right. Because there's certain things you don't like, certain things that just make me laugh. So Morris liked getting busy in public places, including the Louvre. Morris didn't marry until he was 57. During his bachelor years, he had quite a few romantic escapades, one of which cost him a leg in a different escapade in France. Morris carried on an extended affair with a married woman who lived in the Louvre.
Hmm.
Before it became one of the most famous art museums in the world, home to the Mona Lisa, the Louvre was a palace for the French king, and Morris's lady friend also happened to live there. Morris recorded their love affair in his diary, using the word celebrating as code for sex. If his diary is any indication, apparently the two like to take risks and celebrate quite often. One of the diary entries describes the pair having sex in the hallway with the doors open. And this is what he writes in his diary. Go to the Louvre. We take the chance of interruption and celebrate in the passage while Mademoiselle is at the harpsichord in the drawing room. The husband is below. Visitors are hourly expected. The doors are all open. He didn't record whether they were caught or not.
Dun, dun, dun.
Celebrating.
Morris attempted surgery on his urethra with a whale bone, and it killed him.
Every man that is listening is cringing right now.
Okay, yeah. Late in life, he experienced a blockage that gave him trouble urinating. Today, scholars believe he may have been suffering from prostate cancer. But this crafty founding father took a DIY approach to the problem, and he attempted to treat the blockage by sticking a piece of whalebone up his urethra. In the process, he caused a great deal of damage that ultimately contributed to his death. Days after he died, a Boston newspaper reported that Morris died from a short but distressing illness. Very much so. Yes.
Ouch.
Poor guy.
Let's move along. Morris married a housekeeper accused of adultery and murder. For years, Morris never settled down, preferring instead to spend his time romancing married women. But he shocked the world when, at the age of 57, he married his housekeeper. And that was only the beginning. At a Christmas party in 1809, Morris announced his marriage to Anne Gary Randolph, 22 years his junior. Anne, known as Nancy, had a reputation dating back to 1792, when she was accused of adultery and murder.
Ooh.
Nancy, just 17 at the time, reportedly slept with her brother-in-law. The illicit union produced a baby who died shortly after birth. Nancy was tried for murder, though she insisted the baby had been stillborn. She was eventually acquitted. On the day he married Nancy, Morris wrote in his diary, "I marry this day Anne Gary Randolph. No small surprise to my guests."
Go big or go home.
Yes.
Morris lost his leg after sleeping with a married woman. He lost his leg at age 32 after being hit by a carriage. But what sounds like a simple accident goes much deeper. The incident happened in Philadelphia at the intersection of Logan's Alley and Dock Street, according to historian Dave Kimball. Morris, a reputed ladies' man, found himself in hot water after a furious husband learned the founding father was sleeping with his wife. Morris was running from the scorned husband when a carriage ran over his leg. Unfortunately, it had to be amputated. After the accident, one of Morris's friends optimistically hoped that the new peg leg might help Morris avoid the, quote, pleasures and dissipations of life into which young men are too apt to be led, end quote. In response, Morris quipped, "You argue the matter so handsomely and point out so clearly the advantage of being without legs that I am almost tempted to part with the other." Right back at you, bud.
I don't know about this guy's morals, but it does make me laugh. All right. Morris bought Marie Antoinette's furniture and shipped it to the Bronx. Morris acquired some very strange objects during his time as a diplomat. His tenure as the U.S. minister to France coincided with the most tumultuous period of the French Revolution. As an eyewitness to the Reign of Terror, Morris strongly opposed the revolution, ironically siding with monarchy. He even attempted to rescue Louis XVI, or as I call him, XVI, and Marie Antoinette from the revolutionaries who would later execute them. Perhaps to remember his time in France, Morris bought Antoinette's furniture. The elaborate set, which included an intricately decorated armchair, originally resided at the Versailles Palace. During the French Revolution, Morris bought the entire set and shipped it to the Bronx.
Wow. Morris drove off an angry mob with his peg leg. He's putting it to good use. Having that leg didn't slow him down. In fact, his friend and fellow founding father, John Jay, told Morris that he wished his friend had lost something else. For years, Morris kept seducing married women, even after it cost him that limb. And during his time in France, Morris used the leg to chase off a mob of revolutionaries. Morris's years in France coincided with the bloodiest period of the French Revolution. According to historian Forrest MacDonald, Morris was riding in an ornate carriage with a lady friend when the anti-aristocratic mob descended on them. Morris pulled off his leg and shoved it out the window, shouting, "Viva la Revolution!" The sight distracted the revolutionaries long enough for Morris to speed off in his carriage.
That's just a movie image to me. He throws his leg out the window,
like,
pokes at the mob, and they grab it.
Yeah, what is he shaking at me?
So Morris came up with the We the People of the United States. In 1787, delegates met in Philadelphia to draft a new constitution. Morris became one of the most important members of the Constitutional Convention, giving more speeches than any other delegate. 173, to be exact. Morris promoted a strong presidency with veto power, as well as an elitist Senate. he also strongly opposed slavery. Morris was responsible for polishing the final draft of the Constitution, and in doing so, created the document's most important line. The original draft read, "We, the people of the states of New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and Providence Plantations, Connecticut, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia, do ordain, declare, and establish the following constitution for the government of ourselves and our posterity." That's terrible. Morris changed it to the much more succinct, "We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union."
All the more proof we all need editors.
Yes.
But also the Constitution, when we say we shouldn't touch the Constitution, which you and we don't necessarily say that, it wouldn't have included the rest of the country.
That's
either,
right.
Right? So it
That's true.
Did need to be edited.
Yeah,
and
we would have had to add it.
Changed.
Time.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Morris hated slavery. Unlike many other founding fathers, the Declaration of Independence famously stated, "All men are created equal." However, George Washington and Thomas Jefferson owned nearly 1,000 slaves in total. In sharp contrast, Morris strongly opposed slavery. During the Constitutional Convention, he called slavery a nefarious institution. He harshly condemned the practice, saying, "Proceed southwardly in every step you take. Through the great regions of slaves presents a desert increasing with the increasing proportion of these wretched beings."
Wow.
Yeah.
Powerful.
Oh, interesting. He also created a modern Manhattan. Morris grew up in the Bronx, which was rural farmland in his day. And as an adult, he played a central role in shaping the state of New York by promoting the Erie Canal. He also forever left his stamp on New York City by reforming Manhattan's city plan. In 1807, Morris was appointed to a commission charged with crafting a master plan for the growing city's layout. In 1811, the commission produced a grid system for the city with 155 streets and 12 avenues. Rejecting the circles and ovals that dominated European cities, the planners eschewed European-style plazas that created irregular building lots. Instead, Manhattan would be a city of right-angled houses, cheap to build and convenient to live in. In order to create the massive change, the city had to tear down 39% of pre-grid buildings because they were in the middle of a new street.
That makes so much sense to me.
It does, but wouldn't New York have been so much more lovely if it did have those?
It would have been weird.
It would have. I mean, but those plazas and everything, I mean, those are like the gathering points, and yeah. Can't do that.
So Morris grew up in an idyllic estate named after his family, the Bronx neighborhood of Morrisania. It makes me
creative.
It traces its history back to the 1670s when the Morris family bought 500 acres of land along the Harlem River. When Governor Morris was born on the land in 1752, by that point, encompassing some 2,000 acres, it was home mainly to small farms and dairy cattle until Morris built an enormous mansion for himself. The Morris clan even offered the family estate to the Continental Congress as a potential site for America's new capital. Today, the neighborhood still contains St. Anne's Church, where Morris is buried.
Okay. Well, it's also hard to keep all the Morrises straight. Governor Morris wasn't the only Morris who witnessed the founding of the country. His half-brother, Lewis Morris, also signed the Declaration of Independence. His financier friend, Robert Morris, who was not directly related to him, but also penned his name on the document. After the war, Governor and Robert collaborated to establish America's financial security. Robert Morris acted as superintendent of finance during the Revolutionary War, and almost single-handedly keeping the war effort afloat. But Robert faced a significant downfall of his own. While Governor was serving in the U.S. Senate, Robert lost much of his money speculating on land and died in near poverty. As for Governor's unique first name, it was his mother's maiden name. And yes, it means Governor. Today, Baby Namespedia reports Governor is not popular as a baby name for boys.
Newsflash.
No joke. Right.
So Morris served in the Continental Congress as an ally of George Washington. During the American Revolution, Morris worked for the New York Revolutionary Government and later served in the Continental Congress as one of its youngest members. Morris became close with George Washington as well as many other founding fathers. Morris, who kept a detailed diary and recorded many details about his life and letters, served on multiple committees during the Continental Congress, and he wrote that he did the vast majority of the work on every committee on which he served. I kind of love that. Yes. I worked on the committee, but it was really all me.
Yeah.
Morris was a strong supporter of George Washington, and the two remained close for decades. Later, Morris played a central role in the Constitutional Convention. He was instrumental in shaping the Constitution that has governed America for centuries.
Interesting.
I love, this, you know, these are people.
Yeah.
And I always just picture, like, picture 10 people you know, and if they were there, would they have written as eloquently? Would they have been as passionate? Would they have framed everything, the Declaration, the Constitution? Would they have formed it the way we did? They're amazing people, mm-hmm. but they're still people.
Right. And are they amazing? I mean, I scoff a little bit, too, because it is all men. They are all white men, and they're all very elite, you know, wealthy white men as well. So there is not a vast array of differences among them. They're all going to be pretty similarly minded. They did say, you know, point out that he was against slavery, but that is one of his best friends is George Washington, you know. Yeah. So obviously not that against it that they aren't still friends. But that's interesting. I know we only have a couple minutes left, but can we talk a little bit more about the partnership between the column and the Clatsop County Historical Society? Because I love it. I mean, it's just this perfect
It's really exciting.
Mix of the organizations.
So we actually started, we had a joint board meeting between both organizations, the board of the Friends of the Historia column and the Clatsop County Historical Society's board back in March, and just looked for ways we could cooperate and did it make sense. We're very eerily similar-sized organizations, budget-wise, staffing-wise.
Oh, really? They have that many staff?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
They do?
Because it's open forever. I mean, it's open from like 8 a.m. until 6 p.m., 8 p.m., and gift shop plus the parking.
Okay.
So, and we're just looking at efficiencies of scale, and they didn't have an executive director, and I'm an executive director.
So longest serving.
Technically now I'm the executive director of both organizations.
Okay.
We didn't at the Historical Society have a gift shop manager. So now we share a gift shop manager between the two. We're looking at ways to do marketing together, order things for the gift shops together.
Right.
And just ways to we can cooperate. And it just makes sense. We've had a number of joint board meetings since then. And we're looking at different projects and different things to do. And things like glider games came out of some of those conversations. And we just think it makes a lot of sense. And we don't know where it's going, but it's really exciting. And we just think it makes a lot of sense.
And a lot of the people that would come through here, I mean, a lot of them are tourists.
Sure.
So they're going to be directed to the column.
Yes.
At some point.
Or vice versa.
Yeah. So then that mix of training, too. So are you eventually going to be able to pull so that people
can
do
both? Right now, we agreed we wouldn't mix any money.
Okay.
So there's nobody on both payrolls or anything like that. I'm sorry, let me rephrase that, because there is a summer hire that is working at the Film Museum and up at the column, but getting two paychecks.
Sure. Oh, okay.
So, you know, we haven't mixed money yet.
Yes.
But perhaps someday we'd like to cross train so that, we're short at the Film Museum and there's three people in the gift shop up at the column. Let's move one down to the Film Museum today. That kind of thing. So a lot of cross training, we hope someday, but not quite yet.
And then historically speaking, how much of an impact did the column have when it was built? I mean,
well, you know, we're coming up on the 100th anniversary, 2 years away, 26. So it was a pretty big deal. And we're going to talk about more in the next couple of years about that.
All right. There's your deep tease, everyone. Turn back to us for more information. And go out. Go ahead.
You were about to say my line.
I was.
Say it.
Go out and make some history.
We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.